This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Washington just released Shaka Toney, not a shocker. He was their seventh round pick, remember, back in 2021, but he was suspended last year for a gambling violation, reinstated by the league last week, but they released him today. You know, the last regime thought he had a lot of talent and thought there was a chance that he could develop into at least, at the very least, a situational third down pass rusher. But Shaka Toney released. Look, this is an area. They added Armstrong. They added Fowler Jr. During free agency. They added Cleveland Farrell. I almost forgot about him. I still wonder, and we won't know until we get into the next few months and certainly training camp, I wonder what Quinn thinks of KJ Henry and Andre Jones Jr. I'm just curious about those two players. I thought that Henry in particular showed some real quickness off the edge. And I thought Jones Jr. showed some real length and sort of, you know, ability to get to the quarterback in his limited time. I don't know. They remember, they brought F.A. Obata back, right? And so he's there with Armstrong, Fowler, and Farrell, and Henry, and Jones. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody else, but I'm not going to be forgetting Shaka Toney anymore. They released Shaka Toney. Schefter's got some stuff that he just put out that I'll read to you here shortly. But Jaden Daniels was on a podcast with Shannon Sharpe and Chad Johnson, as in Chad Ochocinco. Now, I've watched a bunch of the clips that are out there from this podcast, and it's a bit painful because they barely even let him speak. But Denton found a couple of areas where he spoke and cut up three different sound bites. This was Jaden Daniels on his playing weight, which always seems to be a topic when it comes to him at the next level.
Have you talked to any of the teams and have your trainer say, Jay, we probably need to put about 10, 15 pounds on you? Not right now, but through the process over the next year or so.
Yeah. Most definitely. Like, teams I talked to, there's like, what I played last year, I was like around like 205. So there was like, you know, we just going to put on weight progressively, but we ain't going to overload you. So, you know, right, your play start to digress.
So that was, I mean, I think we've heard that before. I think he jokingly said on, I forget what show it was. Maybe it was McAfee. No, it was one of the press conferences that he had, because I think this is the first actual media outside of press conference that he's done. The number one question asked about him is, can he put on more weight? This was him, again, with Chad Johnson and Shannon Sharpe on their podcast, on the visits that he made to teams.
So how's the visits going? You go to these teams, you say you have 30 visits. I don't know if you take it all 30 of them. So when they get, so walk our audience out, viewing audience and our listening audience through, what is it like for Jaden Daniels? Let's just say, okay, you went to Washington and New England, Arizona. Let's just take those three teams because they're in the top five. And what are they asking you to do? Are they asking you to diagram plays? They ask you, okay, what's this play from what you did in college? What's that process like?
Man, it's kind of just like, you know, they want to kind of introduce you to the offense. Okay. You know, see, quiz you a little bit, get up and, you know, do a little cadence here and there. learn more about yourself. That's kind of like on those visits, they want to learn more about the person. You know, they know about the football player, right, but they want to learn more about the person, like your background, where you come from, you know, how was you raised, stuff like that. So that's kind of what I've been getting. And then from there, they really want to see your football IQ. Like, what can you remember? It's kind of like they quiz you a little bit. So they just want to see if you're a smart football player, especially being a quarterback. You know, you got to have a high football IQ. So
absolutely,
that stuff like that I kind of did when I was on the visits.
There you go. He didn't get specific team by team, but that was his general answer to how those three visits go. By the way, for Shannon Sharp, the teams have top 30 visits. They get 30 players that they can come in to visit with them. And then there was a lot of discussion, you know, last week. There's been a lot of discussion about Antonio Pierce being on the staff at Arizona State when he was a player, being involved in the recruitment of Jaden Daniels to Arizona State. This idea that, you know, he'd love to play in Vegas and reunite with Antonio Pierce, but, you know, they don't have a top three pick. Here's what he said about his relationship with Antonio Pierce.
We're talking about the Raiders. AP was the DC when you was at Arizona State, and this would be an opportunity if you were, they made a move, because obviously you're not going to be there when they select, so they're going to have to jump over a lot of people to select you. What would it be like, you know AP, how he is as a person, you know how he is as a coach. What would that be like to be reunited with a guy that you was with at Arizona State?
I don't know how they're going to pull it off. but I mean, that's above my pay grade, man. But
yeah, I wouldn't do it. I ain't trading. Man, why would I give AP up that? You're a transformational quarterback, Jay.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Man. I ain't giving that up.
Mm-hmm. Hey, man, just AP, man. AP, just as a human being, you know, he the right coach for that team. You know, just him and the intensity that it brings, you know, he challenged people. He was challenging me at 18. So I know if I was to go to the Raiders, I'm not saying I'm going to go there or I want to go there. You know, I want to go wherever my name called. But if I was to go to the Raiders, I know as soon as I step foot, he's going to challenge me. He don't care how high I was drafted, none of that. You know, he's going to challenge me every day.
Yeah, so that was him discussing Antonio Pierce. Man, Antonio Pierce is one of those guys that over the course of time, you hear people that have been around him that you never, ever hear anything other than how much everybody that's ever been around him understands that he was made to be a head coach. Chris Cooley, when he was named interim coach, when they fired Josh McDaniel in the middle of the season or whenever that was. Cooley doesn't even pay that much attention except on Sundays. He literally texted me that day and said, I promise you right now, mark this down, Antonio Pierce just got named interim head coach in Vegas. He will be the head coach. There is no doubt he will be the head coach. Anybody that played with him like Cooley did, anybody that was around him, they have always said incredible things about Antonio Pierce. And look, that team with Pierce played much better football, much more competitive football down the stretch. Actually, weren't they actually a little bit alive for a playoff spot down the stretch? Remember that Thursday night game when they destroyed the Chargers, Denton? They scored 60-something in that game.
Yeah, it was like 663. When they beat Kansas City, they were still mathematically alive on Christmas.
On Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they played – who did they play the next week? It was a big game for the wild card race. I'm pulling it up right now. He had Aiden O'Connell starting at quarterback, the Purdue quarterback. They played the Colts the following week. And they lost 23-20 on a field goal at the gun. 63, they lost to the Vikings at home 3-0 on December 10th. You know, I think it's one of the lowest scoring games of all time. 3-0. And the next week, they scored 63 points against the Chargers on Thursday Night Football. Then they went to Arrowhead and won with basically no offense, 20-14. And almost beat Indianapolis, and that would have been a four-game winning streak to end the season. But look, this is not free agency. There is not a choice for Jaden Daniels, and there, I think, is some recognition of that. So Schefter just put out a little while ago what he's hearing, intel, what Adam Schefter is hearing. It's a story, and there are several topics covered, including what the Commanders could be getting with a new quarterback. And he writes, Heisman Trophy winning quarterback Jaden Daniels knows he's entering the draft, not free agency, which I just said, which is why he is ready to accept wherever he is selected and attempt to become the face of that franchise. While Daniels would have liked more face time with the Commanders officials during his visit last week, which included three of the other top quarterbacks in the class, the signs continue to point to Washington taking him at number two. The Commanders have been highly impressed with Daniels' abilities, Schefter writes, and they are not alone. One NFL head coach whose team is not in the quarterback market said he would take Daniels over Caleb Williams. quote, it's a no-brainer for me. Jaden looks like the best guy in this draft, closed quote. That from an NFL head coach not in the quarterback category. Another head coach that Schefter talked to compared Daniels to Lamar Jackson and said, quote, if you pick Daniels, you're getting Lamar 2.0, but he's further along as a passer than Lamar was when he came out, the coach said, closed quote. Washington is still going through the process. It's process, Schefter writes, but Daniels is the favorite to be its pick. So that was that. He also talked about the teams that have been fielding calls for a trade back or a trade up if you're behind Washington and New England. And he doesn't even mention Washington as part of this conversation. He writes, the Patriots, slated to pick number three, have been fielding calls from teams. Wait, did he write that Washington's been fielding calls from teams? He did not. The Cardinals. Okay, he had earlier talked about the Cardinals being open for business. So he writes, the Patriots, slated to pick number three, also have been fielding calls from teams. It would take a big offer for New England to move off that spot, knowing it needs to come out of round one with a quarterback. But the team has listened, and the Vikings, among others, have attempted to move up. Some around the league believe that if the Vikings can get as high as number three, their preference would be Drake May, who was coached in high school by new quarterbacks coach Josh McCown, which we've talked about, and we had Drake May's high school coach on. Scott, I know Scott listens to the show, but he was on with us about a month ago. Schefter, in the part of his story about the Patriots trading up, moving back, doesn't mention anybody else. So there you go. Also, there are certain teams that maybe people haven't been thinking about drafting quarterback-wise. Dallas is one of them. I've read a lot, here over the last couple of days, and maybe you guys have as well, that the Cowboys, especially with the Dak Prescott situation, could be in the quarterback market, but my God, they have to draft offensive linemen. I mean, how are you going to say to Dak Prescott, we're not giving you the contract extension, we need you to go out and win us a Super Bowl this year, and you basically lost a bunch of key people off your offensive line. You lost your center. You lost your starting left right tackle last year. I mean, who do they have left? Do they have Zach Martin left? Yeah, they have him. Do they have the kid from Tulsa that they drafted in the first round a few years ago, I think? But can you imagine if the Cowboys picked a quarterback, let's just say, somewhere on night two, like a Rattler or a Jordan Travis, somebody like him? And don't be surprised, Schefter writes, hold on, where is it? I had it here a second ago. He writes, the Seahawks will have additional insight into a few local prospects, including Michael Penix Jr. Seattle will have an intriguing decision to make if both are available. when it comes up at when their pick comes up at 16. If Penix Jr. is on the board and offensive lineman Troy Fatano is on the board as well, both played with the Huskies and both could potentially be first round picks. It's interesting. Schefter writes which one of the two they might be interested in. He writes, with regards to Penix, though, it should be pointed out that the Seahawks are high on quarterback Sam Howell, who they traded for. All right. John Keim was on my podcast over the weekend. You'll hear some of that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Ben Standig coming up at 12. We will talk Caps and their Game 1 loss. And by the way, the Nats, who shut out the Astros yesterday during Denton's news, coming up in about 20 minutes. But John Keim was on my podcast over the weekend, and we talked about a lot of the noise from last week. But then we got into, all right, let's move forward. And I wanted to find out from John kind of what he knows right now and what he's thinking right now. And you'll hear, and I think it's an interesting take from John later on in this conversation about if it's not Jaden Daniels, which you'll hear he thinks it is, who would it be? May or McCarthy? And he definitely has a lean as far as that's concerned. Here was part of our conversation from my podcast. So what are you hearing right now? What is your best guess as to what they do Thursday night on the clock at number two?
Best guess would still be Jaden Daniels.
Yep.
So, you know, and I'm sorry to all the people who want Drake May. It's not my decision, you know, but I do. But I think that would be my best educated guess. Now, the percentage I put on that, it's hard to say because I don't know. But that would be the best guess at this point.
Who do you want? Who do you think they should pick?
I mean, I don't have any problem with Jaden Daniels at all, and I'll say that. And it's funny because someone else asked me, like, I don't want them to do anything because it's not my job to, you know what I mean? Like, it just, I'm going to cover it the same way. And
all right, let me ask you this way. You've watched a lot of tape.
Better quarterback,
yeah. Who's the second best quarterback in this draft?
Caleb Williams. No, I'm just kidding. I think Jaden is. So that's like, so for me, based on what I've seen, and I'm going to preface this too, because I also get people telling me, well, on my draft board, he's the fifth quarterback. It's like, give me your draft board. Like, how many guys have you watched? You know what I mean? Like, you know, settle down there.
Yeah.
And I don't have a draft board. I watch these guys and I like to see what could appeal to them. What would be the concerns? There are definitely some concerns with Jaden Daniels. There will be concerns with J.J. McCarthy, and there are concerns with Drake May. And there are things I like about each of those latter two guys. But I think with Daniels, to me, a separator, there's a couple of things. One, every defensive coach that I've ever covered hates facing guys like him, period. I mean, they create chaos for a defense, and Dan Quinn knows that very well. And so I think that's one thing. And, you know, when I talk to – the other thing is, like, when I talk to coaches I really respect, he was the guy that they would talk about more, you know, for the most part. So, you know, that also has, you know, plays into why I think he'd be a good pick for them. You know, now, like, clearly he's got to learn how to protect himself. And that's not a light discussion, no pun intended. But it's not, you know, it shouldn't be one that's, you know, that it is an important one because it's not as much as just teaching the slide. It's about evolving the mindset. And, you know, you need this guy to stay healthy. And so sometimes you got to throw it away. Sometimes you got to, you know, do that. So, like, if he can do that and develop there, then I think he can be really good. Because the thing that swayed me too, Kevin, was I just felt like as a passer, he did a good job. And Dan Quinn told me this at the owners' meetings. Like, he liked how quickly he went through the progression.
Yeah, you had that in that story. Matters. That was good.
Yeah, that stuff matters. And, you know, like, you say, okay, but he doesn't throw over the middle a lot. Where are the anticipation throws? And then I was able to find examples of some of those, right? So there's going to be adjustments. We all know it. But I think there'd be true for anybody. And the other thing is, too, what is your plan for whenever this guy gets here? And I think whoever you get, you better have a really good plan, because that's a big key in any quarterback's development, no matter where you go. So, but yeah, no, I think he's, you know, but like I said, if they took J.J. McCarthy, I can say, okay, I can see the appeal here and here. Like, maybe I thought this other guy, but the other thing is, like, what I don't ever want from people is to think that, well, just because you said it would be James, so therefore you're biased against this other guy. Well, no, ultimately, Kevin, what I'd like to see here is a guy that's actually decent for a while. So if I say it should be Jaden and they draft J.J. McCarthy and he's good, like, okay, you got one right. That's great for this place, right? It's great for the fan base. Ultimately, what I would want is somebody that's worth watching, not just early on because they're citable, but because they grow and develop as a quarterback and become a really good quarterback. I am tired of watching subpar quarterback play, as everybody around here is.
If I were to tell you that Jaden Daniels wasn't the pick, but they picked a quarterback at number two, based on the last minute, you mentioning J.J. McCarthy more than Drake May, is it fair to say that John Keim would predict or would guess the best chances would be J.J. McCarthy at two over Drake May?
Probably. I don't, and that's a, if I, yeah, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. How's that?
Perfect.
Like, the hard part is, unless you hear it from a high thing, like, it's really hard to know. So, like, you can start to, you know, you start to overthink some things and you start to piece some things together. And it's like, if the order was that, it would not surprise me at all.
So just one more on the quarterback, and then I'll ask you about whether or not you think they'll trade back into the first round to take a tackle or a pass rusher. But at the beginning of this, you said that you thought that they probably had their mind made up, but they were, you know, essentially crossing T's, dotting I's with the top 30 visits, with the four quarterbacks in, et cetera. Do you think, you know, at this point here, just 5 days before the draft, do you think there's a consensus? Do you think they're all in on the guy that they want to select? You think it's Daniels. I think it's Daniels, too. Do you think that they're all in, or that this is, you know, primarily Adam Peters? Or do you have any sense of who likes him the most, who isn't sure, et cetera?
At this point, it's hard for me to say all of that, because I don't – well, here's what I would say that I feel is probably what's going on. And, again, with the top 30, it would be only natural if you had a lean at that point, right? I don't know how you go get through 3.5 months of evaluation
right.
and not have, like, somebody that you're like, okay, you know, I keep coming back to player X, right? Get through this, I keep coming back to this. But what I think what Peters has always said is you don't fall in love with the guy because you don't want to miss something in that evaluation, whether it's positive or negative. And then, you know, which could have either led you off the guy or someone else or whatever. So but it would only be natural if you had that. And so I think with also knowing how Peters works, I can also see, okay, meet on whatever. I think he said they're going to meet Friday. Go over everything. Okay, here's where I'm thinking right now. Meet on Friday, come back Monday or Sunday or whatever it is, meet again to see, like, we still there? Yes. Okay. Boom. Like, so I think that's where I there's no rush to say, all right, for sure, but keep meeting, just make sure that you're, and I think he's a guy that gets, he likes to solicit a lot of information and opinions. Some people that can trip them up. You know, I think, because you might get too much information and it's like goes all over the place, but you just want to hear different opinions. And we'll see ultimately what happens. And, you know, it sounds like And I think Lance Newmark is very good in this situation too. But it sounds like it doesn't sound like he's the guy that would get tripped up by too much information. But, you know, I think the proof will be, how does it turn out? I mean, not even just with the quarterback pick, but with the rest of the draft, because you're getting opinions on a lot of things. So that's where I think I got, you know, I know he said the other day that there would probably be sometime early this week, but I think what you do is you just, let's meet, talk about this. I was still in the same spot. Meet the next day, see where you're at. That's, you know, and see if there's any equivocation or, you know, somebody's close on a guy. You know what I mean? So I think that's the process that takes place.
You know, I have one more on the quarterback, actually, because I'm remembering something that you wrote, and I'm trying to find it, so I'm going to end up paraphrasing here. But I actually read from it a couple of weeks ago on the show, and that was some of the stuff that you had from Dan Quinn that was very good, including what he said about, you know, Jaden Daniels processing, et cetera. Yeah. But there was a bit of an implication when I read it that Quinn is influential. Very influential in this decision. You mentioned specifically that it was Adam Peters, you know,
right,
final call, but that there, and I'm forgetting what it was specifically that I read from Quinn or what you wrote about Quinn's involvement in the decision. But did I read that correctly? Because you and I never talked about this. I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. That Quinn's involvement in making this decision is significant. Yes or no?
I think so. Yeah, because first of all, he's the head coach, so I don't know how you don't involve him in a big time. Not just involve, but have a pretty big role or say. And because if you're a good GM, typically you're going to give the coach the quarterback he wants. If there is a guy that he just doesn't want and he says, sorry, we're taking this guy, that's when it becomes harder. And we've seen that here before, right? We saw that for, 24 years maybe, just to guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we've seen that. When you get the guy, the coach, a guy that maybe he's not as thrilled with, and not in every situation did that happen, but certainly in some cases it did. And I don't think Adam Peters would do that. So I think they'll work hard to get to the same point. It doesn't mean like, come on, Dan, come on, say uncle. I don't think it's going to be like that, or that, you know, vice versa. I think Dan Quinn might win a wrestling. Well, actually, Adam was a DN too, so who knows? But I don't think it's going to be like, I don't think it's going to be some big wrestling match, verbal wrestling match that has to take place, because I think over time, you know, and here's the other thing that Adam is really good at. What do the coaches want, and who's the guy that I feel best fits that? That's what he was known for in San Francisco, too. Like, finding the guys that fit the profile of what the coaches want. So that's where I think, like, Dan Quinn would absolutely have a say. And I think, you know, then you look at Cliff Kingsbury's offense, but, you know, we don't know how long Kingsbury will even be here to run that offense. So you've got to take the guy who's not just a fit, you know, make sure he fits, but can be good long-term in a couple different offenses. So, but yeah, I think Quinn would have a fairly – nobody's told me for sure what his say is, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't have some level of a big say. Now, Adam has the final say.
Right. So, yeah, I found what you wrote. You wrote, while Peters will make the final call on the selection, this year will mark the first time Quinn has been charged with helping find a quarterback. And then you wrote, Quinn also has relied on Peters and Cliff Kingsbury for their insight throughout the draft process. And I think that just indicated to me, look, from the jump when both of them were hired in their introductory press conferences, they just talked ad nauseum about this aligned vision, that it'll be very collaborative, that they have a shared vision on what they called player traits. You know, so I'm assuming... And Quinn, look, is the experienced one of this group. Not that he's picked a quarterback because Matt Ryan was there, obviously, and he was the D coordinator in Dallas, and in Seattle he was the D coordinator. But, you know, one of the reasons that I think you and I both knew from the jump that Quinn was a major contender and at the top of their list, or certainly near the top, was they had a first-time, you know, owner, and they had a first-time GM, and Dan Quinn isn't first-time at anything. And so, right. Yeah.
His experience matters. And now, the other thing is, you know, it's also like Dan Quinn is not an expert on quarterbacks. He's an expert at defending them.
Right.
So, and he knows, and that's part of it too, is like, because some of what I asked him was like, okay, I'm curious to know what is it that you look for when you're trying to defend a quarterback, what do you try to do, and how does that shape how you then look for a quarterback in the draft? Because this is, again, this, like you said, it's the first time. So part of that was he loves to, and he's talked about this, disguise things and throw quarterbacks off with some post-snap changes. So you flip it, and it's like, so what he wants to see is a quarterback who can process quickly after the snap if it changes. And that's one of the benefits of Daniels and seeing him or playing in the SEC was you saw a little bit more of that than you certainly were going to in the ACC and in the Big Ten. There are a couple Big Ten defenses that might do that, but, you know, like Schiano at Rutgers probably does more of that than anybody. So I think like that gives you a little bit of a look, but in the SEC you're going to see it for, you know, a few times. And so I think that whether or not the others can or can't do it, that I'm not saying that, but it's just, I think part of the evaluation process for him was the post-snap, how do they process post-snap if things change? And that's something that's key. And you know, I mean, I saw things with McCarthy that were pretty good in that area at times. And, you know, I didn't see in the ACC, again, when I'd watch May, I didn't see a lot of that as much as far as like defense just changing after the snap. But I think he does, you know, May does some really good things from the pocket when things break down too. So, and that's part of that, right? So, but yeah, no, that was a big thing for him.
John_Keim on X on Twitter. We went into all of the post first pick for Washington at number two as well. You can hear that on my podcast, which is available anywhere you get get a podcast, including the KevinSheehanShow.com. All right, up next, we'll do some news, meaning we'll talk about the Caps game one loss to New York, Nats with another impressive pitching performance yesterday, and more coming up. We'll get back to the draft with Ben at noon. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and clear free and available on the Odyssey app.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, we'll get to Denton's news in a moment. You're going to be able to hear every single Washington draft pick live right here on the Team 980 starting Thursday night, all right, with coverage from Dudley's in Shirlington. We will simulcast on 106.7 The Fan and 980, right, Denton, with Grant and Danny hosting on night one. Denton and I will host night two starting at 7 o'clock. Night two could be really fun with all of the picks that they have. And Linnell will pick it up at 10 o'clock after we are done, if the draft goes beyond 10 o'clock, and it will. And Washington will still have picks to make. And then Saturday, all-day coverage right here on 980 with Pete Medhurst and Denton in the driver's seat for that as well. So every single pick starting Thursday night at 8 o'clock right through the last pick on Saturday afternoon will be heard exclusively right here on the Team 980. All right, Denton, let's talk some news, and let's start with the Caps.
Yeah, Caps lose yesterday to the Rangers in game one of the wild card. It's funny, Kevin, I was sitting at a Sheetz in Lynchburg as I was driving home from Charlotte, and the score was nothing-nothing. I sit back down with my Cinnabon Delights, which, by the way, best thing on the Sheetz menu, and I look up, and the score's 3-0. I was up 3 minutes, and they got – you like Cinnabon? The Cinnamon Delights are insane. They're
Are you talking about Cinnabon?
Yeah, Cinnabon Delights at Sheetz. It's by far one of the most slept-on fast food, really? Food menus ever.
Sheetz and Wawa have pretty good sandwiches. So I watched the game. Yeah, I had some hoops on too, but I was watching Caps Rangers. I thought Charlie Lindgren was outstanding in the first period. I thought defensively they were under siege, but they did a great job. And the bottom line is, going into this series, those that we had on the show last week said, look, they've got a shot because they've got a hot goaltender. And I thought Lindgren was outstanding in that first period, had a couple of big-time saves, both against New York's power play, and we saw six power play opportunities in the first period of that game. And then, you know, even 5-on-5 or 4-on-4, which we saw some of in the first period as well. And I came out of that first period saying, all right, they kind of weathered a bit of an onslaught and some opportunities, and they had some opportunities as well, and you're scoreless, and this is the kind of game I think they're going to want to play in this series, you know, where it comes down to great goaltending and maybe on the other end a deflection off a blade, you know, into the net. But then in 2 minutes and 6 seconds, first of all, how big is that dude Rempe? He's massive on ice. He scores that first goal, which was a beautiful sort of wraparound and then touch pass to Rempe. Then Panarin scores, and then Vesey scores, and it's 2 minutes and 6 seconds of everything getting by Lindgren. I actually didn't think, you know, any of them were terrible goals. Maybe the Panarin goal to a certain degree, the Vesey score deflected, I think, off of Carlson, maybe. But the Caps have not been a come-from-behind team. Those of you that have watched all these games understand that it is, you know, a real great position for the way they play to get that first goal, and certainly not to get down by more than a goal, and they were down 3 in a couple of minutes. So I think we understood it was over. They got one back shortly after Vesey's goal, but just couldn't put enough pressure. And I thought that the Rangers were clearly the better team. I mean, ice tilted, better shot opportunities, more shots, more, you know, puck possession, etc. And they were just clearly the better team. And, you know, without Lindgren, it could have been, you know, 5 or 6 goals ultimately that they gave up. But, you know, good effort in that first period. That was something to build on, I think. They're going to have to score a little bit. You know, one goal's not going to do it, although Lindgren has kept them in a lot of these tight 2-1, 3-2 kind of games. It's one game. They get another shot tomorrow night. And look, in the playoffs, they say this more about the NBA than the NHL. A series really doesn't start until the home team loses a game. Still an opportunity to get a split with a win tomorrow night. But the Rangers, we knew, were much better as a team going into this series, and they showed it in game one, especially in that second period. It was bang, bang, bang. 2 minutes, 6 seconds, 3 goals, game over. Anyway, what else?
A better outcome for the Nats yesterday. They win 6-0 over the Astros. Astros are down a little bit this year, but the Nats are sitting at 10-11 through the first, you know, stretch of the season. That's a pretty good spot for them.
Mitchell Parker, all right, now 2-0 with a 1.50 ERA, 12 strikeouts, 0 walks in 2 starts. Beating, by the way, the Dodgers and the Astros. And so the Nats have now won 3 of their last 4 series, beating the Giants before the Dodgers in Houston. Right? Am I right about that? Maybe it wasn't the Giants.
It was the Giants.
Was the Giants, right? they won the Houston series, winning 2 games at home. They pushed that series against the Dodgers. No, they won 2 of 3 against the Dodgers, right?
Yeah, they won 2
and then
three.
They lost the series to the A's, and they won 2 of 3 against San Francisco. I mean, really playing very well, unexpectedly here. Problem is, the division is playing well. The Braves are 14-6. The Phillies have won 6 in a row. Now, they just played the worst team in baseball, the White Sox. The Mets were on a tear before they lost yesterday. And the Nats are 10-11, a game below .500 in 4th place. But, you know, playing some pretty good baseball, and Mitchell Parker really throwing, you know, 7 scoreless innings in a 6-0 shutout. That is some encouraging stuff. C.J. Abrams again yesterday, 2 for 4. I'm sorry, 1 for 4, but 2 runs scored, walk He's been outstanding. Had another stolen base. I think that was his fourth or fifth of the year. So really exciting stuff right now from the Dodgers, from the Nationals, and the Dodgers are in town to start a 3-game set tomorrow night. So what else?
So big news out of music. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2024 announced Ozzy Osbourne, Cher, Mary J. Blige, and A Tribe Called Quest, some of the headliners going in this year.
Huh. I haven't looked at the list. I mean, you're not going to get me to be, you know, I'm just not an Osbourne, Cher. I mean, I don't know. Cher's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Okay. I mean, Mary J. Blige, I love. I mean, one of the great voices. Although there's actually some real controversy between Mary J. Blige and Chaka Khan. All right. Chaka Khan, for me, is maybe the most effortless female voice of all time. She's one of my favorite singers and one of my favorite voices of all time. And she has said before, like in the last 5 to 10 years, that Mary J. Blige can't sing. I mean, basically, like, she can't sing at all. I disagree, but Chaka Khan, the easiest, most effortless female voice. I mean, you've got a lot to choose from. So who else? This does not seem to be a super exciting class. Is that the entire group?
There's a few others. Foreigner is getting in. I think Ozzy's
really
the big
Foreigner's
one.
You get a lot of bands that end up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that you're like, it's same with the NFL Hall of Fame. Really? He's a Hall of Famer? It's the Hall of Good. Peter Frampton's in?
Yes, Peter Frampton getting in as well.
Wow. Frampton Comes Alive, a live album in the 1970s, was, I think, at that moment, the biggest selling album of all time. I could be wrong about that. You know, soon to be supplanted by Rumors, Fleetwood Mac, and then eventually Thriller, Michael Jackson. Look at the list of the top selling albums of all time and tell me where Frampton Comes Alive is on that list. Let me see if I can...
Well, that actually transitions into the next story. I don't think you are necessarily a Swiftie, but the Taylor Swift fans went wild on Friday. She dropped her new album, and according to Spotify, the album had 300 million streams
in
24 hours.
I heard. Yeah,
insane.
My son told me about that. It's incredible. So in terms of this looks like reported sales, all right? So... Thriller's number one, or it's actually, we're looking at 40 or more million copies of an album. This might not be the right list, but it looks like it's Thriller. I don't think this is the right list. That I'm 50 best-selling albums. I'm looking for revenue. Well, that's not the right way to look at it. It would be albums sold, right? It should be albums sold because you have different price points over the years.
It's a hard list to justify now because of streaming and how that's influenced albums.
Yeah. It's not Rolling Stone that you want to look at. No, I would guess that Thriller, Rumors, is AC/DC Back in Black going to be somewhere up there?
Yeah, that is on this list.
Is it?
My
computer just
least.
Froze up. Help me with it. Give me like the top 10 all-time best-selling albums.
Well, so I looked at the Wikipedia, 40 million copies or more. Thriller is obviously up there. It's AC/DC, Back in Black, Whitney Houston, The Bodyguard, Dark Side of the Moon with Pink Floyd, Michael Jackson, Bad, The Eagles, Their Greatest Hits, which I don't know if that should count.
Yeah,
whatever.
Their Greatest Hits album, yep.
Hotel California, Bad
Out of Hell. What about the Bee Gees album?
Saturday Night
from
Fever.
From the 70s.
Yeah, that's on there.
That's on the list?
Yeah, and then Fleetwood Mac Rumors. So Frampton is not on the 40 million copies or more list.
He's not. Okay, I could be wrong about that. I think at that moment in time, it was way up there. It may have been, maybe it's the biggest, because I think that was his debut album. Probably came out in 75 or 76, and I think that may have been his debut album. What about, okay, here it is. I was just going to ask you, where's Jagged Little Pill? Because I watched that documentary on Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. What a great documentary that was. Really well done. I think it's Netflix, maybe Hulu, and it's 13th all time. Zeppelin 4, 11. Rumors is now 9 all time. I think at one point it was number 1 because I think everything, well, no, Hotel California might have been before that. Whatever. All right, what else you got?
All right, did you see over the weekend Howie Schwab passed away from the it was an iconic show for me. I loved Stump the Schwab growing up.
Okay, so I don't know that much about Howie Schwab other than from my close friend Scott Van Pelt and those that worked at ESPN that I've known over the years, and they revered the guy. I never watched that show that you're talking about, but I've certainly heard his name many times over the years, and I thought there were so many incredibly nice tributes from ESPN people now and former ESPN people about him. That's sad. He was not an old guy. He was like in 64 years old or 65 years old, something like that. What else?
Final thing here. Tom Brady will have a live roast on Netflix on May 5th. It's going to be hosted by Kevin Hart. Obviously, Jeff Ross is going to be there because he's at every roast that is ever put on. And then Kevin Hart teased a lot of special guests will be there. I would guess that Rob Gronkowski will be there in attendance, but Tom Brady getting a live roast on Netflix on the 5th of May.
Really? I wonder how he'll handle it.
I can't imagine well, because what, I mean, what's the one thing?
Give me the list of roasters again.
So we only know Kevin Hart for sure. He's
okay,
hosting.
Okay, well, he'll kill it, obviously.
I mean, and he, Kevin Hart is a Philadelphia native, and the one sore spot for Tom Brady has seemingly been that he lost a Super Bowl to Nick Foles.
Right.
So those jokes are going to be flying. Jeff Ross thrives on roast. It's like the one thing that's keeping that dude's career alive. He's on every single roast ever since like 2016. So he's going to be a part of it. And then they just teased surprise guests. But I would guess that Gronk will be in there just because he's teammates with Tom and he's doing the
that
media
won't be
stuff. Yeah, if someone writes for him, it'll be all right. All he got to do is read.
How about Scheffler? He won again. How about the female player, Nelly Korda?
Nelly Korda.
She won for a fifth straight time. You have two dominant individual sport athletes in golf going right now. Nelly Korda just won her fifth straight tournament, including, I think, the first major of the year. And Scheffler just won the RBC in South Carolina. And what is that? That's number 4 this year with a second-place finish?
So his last 5 events, first at the Arnold Palmer, first at Players' Championship, second at Texas Children's, first at the Masters, first at RBC Heritage.
Wow.
That's $16 million over 44 days for those that are wondering.
And then Nelly Korda, 5 straight on the LPGA Tour. Do you guys realize how hard it is to win 5 in a row in a golf tournament where you've got, you know, 128 golfers to start or whatever the number is? She became the third female player in history to win 5 in a row. It was first done by Nancy Lopez in the 70s, and then Annika Sörenstam did it in the early 2000s. Nelly Korda's father was a professional tennis player on the tour for years. I think he's Czech. I think so. And then his son is a highly ranked men's tennis player. And then he's got two daughters, Nelly and another one who's also a professional golfer. Quite the athletic family. Peter Korda, as a tennis player, I don't think he ever won a major, but he was ranked really high for many years. Oh, he's Australian. No. He won the Australian. He's Czech. Yeah, he's Czech. He won the 1998 Australian Open. So he is a one-time major winner and was the runner-up at the 92 French Open. Is that the French Open that was won by Michael Chang? No, Jim Courier beat him. So Chang would have been either the year before or 2 years before, maybe. I don't know. All right, let's get to Ben Standing next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.